Accession number 18467, Reel 1.
Colonel Griffith, 3-1, where were you born, please?
I was born in Peshawar, in the northwest frontier province of what is now Pakistan.
Which year was this?
I beg your pardon?
Which year was this?
1912.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in India?
No, I spent my first between 7 and 8 years as a child in India, and was then brought home to England to go to a preparatory school in Hampshire.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
I went from preparatory school on to Marlborough College, and from there I went to Sandhurst, where I finished what you would call an education, before being commissioned into the army in 1932.
Which regiment did you go into?
Into the 1st Devon Regiment.
Why the Devons?
I had connections with Devon. Part of my family have always lived down here, most of the time in North Devon, but they have now moved down to the south, near Plymouth. But I was brought up with their children while my parents were abroad.
Was your service at first in England or abroad?
Was my
service at first in England or abroad?
It was at first in England, although of five of us commissioned into the 1st Devons, I think I was the only one who really wanted to go abroad. But as these things turn out, everybody else in my batch found some reason for having to suddenly desire to rush abroad for various reasons, to escape from debts, from women, from all sorts of reasons which you could imagine that young subalterns might be up to. And so it took me another 18 months before I was able to get myself posted to the 2nd Devons, who were then in Quetta.
So this was in 1934?
Yes.
Were you in Quetta when the famous earthquake occurred?
No, that came afterwards. We had left Quetta going by train to Fort Sandeman, and then we were the first regiment, I believe, for a long period, some 80-odd years, to march to Waziristan. And that was an experience worth having.
Can you describe it in detail, please?
We did it in a series of marches. Generally going, I suppose, about, 12, 15 miles a day. And although I enjoyed the marching a great deal, I was, as I thought at the time, unfortunately, put onto the job of going ahead with an advance party to lay out the camp and make administrative arrangements for the battalion to come into the evening camp. And so I missed quite a lot of the marching. Anyhow, the battalion went fairly uneventfully. We were sniped one night, although I'm never quite certain as to whether we weren't, shall I say, given a little shock treatment by friendly militia. We never discovered, but we were shot up. And we went from there to Fort Sandeman, where we lived in a tented camp for a short period. I don't know how long it was. It was a week or two. And by that time, I had become rather disillusioned with life in the British Army. And had applied to transfer to the Indian Army.
What was the source of your disillusionment? What was the source of your disillusionment?
What was the...
origins, why were you disillusioned?
Why, because... Well, to start with, when I started life in England, I was put in charge of what was called the anti-tank platoon, which consisted of, I think, three army bicycles with wooden phony Lewis guns strapped to the handlebars. When we were out doing training, we had to be correctly dressed all the time, with our ties done up tight, regardless of the temperature or kind of life we were supposed to be living. Something rather like that went on in India as well. We were never allowed to loosen our ties. Our chin straps had to be very tightly fastened under our chins. This is when we were on training, mind you, not in barracks. And then on the way to Fort Sandeman, I was sent out to build a picket that was going to be occupied by some of our troops that night. And I was out there with my men building this picket, and I looked up, and there was the adjutant and second in command and my company commander and one other second in command of the company, all standing around watching the work going on. And I thought, this is no way to get experience, martial experience, and live a life in the army. I was fed up.
What made you think it would be better in the Indian Army?
That one had more responsibility, and this turned out to be true. Within a very short time of transferring, in fact, to the Indian Army, I was in charge of a company. And given responsibility for putting batches of troops through their annual training on the range, firing live ammunition, a thing one wouldn't have dreamt of doing in England. One began to live. One was supported by Viceroy commissioned officers, they were called, Indian officers, we called them, a vast military experience, who were the soul of tact, but kept one very firmly on the right lines.
When did you transfer to the Indian Army and to which regiment?
I transferred to the Guides Infantry. And in that I was very fortunate because just previous to my transfer, the Guides had been very severely mauled at an operation which was known as the 4080 Momand operation, where they took pretty heavy casualties. I think possibly also the fact that my father was the governor and the first one, I may say, of the Northwest Frontier Province, helped a certain amount. His military secretary was in the Guides, and I wouldn't say that that didn't have an element of assistance in getting my transfer through. I don't know.
Had you wanted the Guides infantry?
Very much.
That was your first choice?
It was my only choice, I think.
When did you join the Guides infantry?
I joined them in I'll have to look up to give you exact dates, but it must have been about 1934, I think. Late 34.
Why was it your only choice?
The Guides were a unique regiment. They specialized in what we used to call frontier warfare. They had very much their own way of doing things. It was a very informal way of doing things. Looking back through my experience, I can only remember one occasion when all of us turned out looking exactly the same. We used to dress according to the work we were going to do, and it was left to us to decide.
Was there a lack of what the British Army called bull?
Very much so. We had no bull at all. The only real mistake we could make was in the field. That is not to say that they weren't a smart regiment. We used to reckon that we required no more than 3 parades to rehearse for a proper military ceremonial parade. We could turn out and produce a ceremonial display as well as any other regiment with a minimum of fuss. To give you the contrast, for instance, when I was with the Devon Regiment, just before transfer, we used to parade once every week, practicing for their 250th anniversary parade. And this went on week after week after week. The Guides wouldn't have dreamt of doing a thing like that. They would have decided what kind of a parade they wanted to do, and they would turn out perhaps 3 practice parades, and then they would do it. And do it as well as any other regular regiment. That's my opinion.
Did the Guides infantry have a distinctive role in the Indian Army?
They, with their history, of course, included operations down in India, and in the time of the mutiny, they put up a wonderful show. Going down and helping to sort out Delhi. But for instance, when the Guides were moving across country, they would turn out infantry and cavalry together, and the infantrymen would hang on to the stirrups of the cavalry and go lolloping across the countryside. We didn't bother about roads and things like that. We just went from A to B by the shortest possible route. And I am glad that I served under one of the last commanding officers who had lived that way. He was a man called Grant, Pat Grant, wonderful soldier. And he lived in the days when in an emergency, an alarm would sound and the regiment would stand too, as it was. It was he who told us this. And the commandant, or the commander of the parade at that time, and it wasn't necessarily, may I say, an infantryman or a cavalryman, would announce that a raid had taken place on the frontier, and that the corps, we called it the corps, would carry out operations in the area of a certain village. And he would announce a rendezvous and then give us a dismissal. And the idea of that was that the corps would dismiss and flow through the country in a way that nobody could tell how many men had turned out or where they were going. Only the men themselves knew where they were going to meet. And having met at that place, they could then get together and operate as a unit, as they were used to doing. And this was, I think, unique. I don't know of any other Indian Army regiment that operated in that fashion.
Where did the Guards Infantry recruit from in your day?
Anywhere. They would recruit any man who was prepared to come and fight as a soldier. A lot of our men came from across the Afghan border. We had certain villages where we had close connections with village people. And I have been on a train journey myself where the train stopped during the night and some Cuttacks came down from their villages having heard that the corps was coming through and were enlisted by the CO in their train. Although officially we weren't supposed to be recruiting from that area. It was supposed to be an area that was run dry of recruits.
Would they accept recruits from South India? Would they accept recruits?
I don't know of any that came from South India. I never heard of any being rejected. We took Dogras from the foothills of the Himalayas. We had Gurkhas at one time, but treated them as any other soldier, not as anything very special. We would, if we could, enlist any outlaw who would come and join us, our ranks. I've known a case of an Oragzai. He's a Pathan on the Afghan side of the Durand line, who, when he was going on leave, would only tell his company commander that he was going on leave on such and such a day, or he would tell the commanding officer, perhaps. He wouldn't let anyone else in the battalion know, because in his own platoon were men who belonged to an opposing gang, should I call it, who would have set out and organized an ambush to get that chap to pay off a blood feud. As long as he was in the regiment, he was as safe as houses. Once he was away and in the countryside, he was treated as an ordinary tribesman and therefore subject to the ordinary tribal feuds. I never heard of any other regiment that lived this way, this sort of mixture of informality with extreme military efficiency.
But when you say outlaws, were they people who were wanted by the authorities?
I can't swear that they were definitely on the gang as required by the authorities. If they were, we wouldn't have let the authorities know. I'm sure of that. Not that we didn't get on well with the authorities. We had very close affiliation with civil authority up in that part of Pakistan.
Whereabouts did you first soldier with the Guides Infantry?
Well, I joined them in Mardan, where I lived for a pretty short time. And then we went by train and road up to Ruzwak in Waziristan. Where we did a normal 3-year tour of duty. Mixing what I would call normal regimental barrack room life with expeditions into the countryside. They were called columns. The brigade used to go out and operate through the countryside for different reasons, sometimes for disciplinary reasons, if a tribe had misbehaved themselves, sometimes just showing the flag, sometimes just to exercise the troops. Generally, these columns went off fairly peacefully, but occasionally they finished in bloodshed. Sometimes quite fierce fighting.
Were you involved in any fierce fighting?
Yes. The first time we were shot up, we had been out. We had been opening the road. We had been picketing the road down to Banu, which was our sort of town in the plains, and we picketed the road because in those days convoys bringing supplies to our camp used to be attacked by local tribesmen, that's if we allowed them to. And we were coming back from one of these columns, and as we got nearer the camp, the locals started sniping us. I never saw any of the locals. I just heard the bullets flicking around the place. And this being my first experience of being under fire, of course, it was treated with a certain amount of hilarity. It wasn't all that serious. And in fact, I don't think any of us was injured. But they did follow us up right to the barbed wire of the camp.
Any casualties?
None amongst our side. I don't know if they served any. I doubt if they had any.
How frightening was that?
Not very. You see, there was no real heavy artillery fire, or really what I would call really heavy machine gun fire. It was playing compared with modern warfare. The only other good side of it was, of course, that we very seldom did any fighting at night. We only got a good night's sleep. Occasionally they would snipe a camp, which meant that you had to turn out and find out why they were sniping you and perhaps bring down some mortar fire or something like that. But generally, we got fairly undisturbed nights.
What was life like in Razmak?
It was a very good life for a young man. We worked very hard. We played very hard. We played games every day that we weren't engaged on operations.
What was your attitude towards the local Pathans?
We always made a point of trying to get to know the locals. At first it was interesting because the local language, Pashto, which in the regiment we all learnt, but it was a different kind of Pashto. It was what we call very soft, sibilant spoken language. And even our own Indian officers had difficulty at first in understanding some of it. Some of the vocabulary was different too, but we got used to it fairly quickly. They had in that part of the world a civilian official known as a Kasadar. He was a local tribal levy who was used for liaison between the services and the local tribespeople. Representatives of these Kasadars used to accompany us in the field. And on holidays, when we used to take to the countryside without troops, they used to accompany us as well, just going out for exercise into the hillsides. Our local hill, incidentally, was, I think, 10,000 feet above sea level. We lived at about between 7,000 and 8,000 feet above sea level.
Was life in Razmak trying or enjoyable?
Very enjoyable. I think probably for some of the older officers doing their second and third and fourth tour away from their families, I think they may have found it fairly trying, but we never did. I did three tours in Waziristan, but when I was offered a chance of going back and serving a similar life again, I turned it down. Because I wanted to come and live a normal married life. I hadn't got married, but I wanted to do so.
But your first tour of duty must have been in the late 30s.
It was huge fun, it really was. We normally were supposed to get very good leave. I never managed to get my leave in the full, I don't know why. But generally you used to get away for 3 or 4 weeks at a time. And then after 3 years you were supposed to get, I think it was something like 9 months leave, so that you could come home to England. But I never seemed to manage that either.